Welcome tonight to this class on the Book of Proverbs called The Road of Wisdom, learning to navigate life God's way. We're going to start tonight with just a basic introduction to the Book of Proverbs and this class. When I was younger, just stepping into adulthood, I had a very clear picture in my mind of what I thought the good life was. It was vivid, it was compelling, and honestly, to me, it felt completely reasonable. I imagined that one day I would find a beautiful woman. I would build a high-profile career that people respected. I would earn a substantial income, live in a large, impressive home with land and plenty of space and privacy. I pictured a life where financial stress didn't exist, and where problems just generally seemed smaller, and where I wasn't weighed down by the same worries that I saw other people worrying about. In my mind, that was it. That was the goal to try to reach. That was the good life. And I don't think I'm alone in thinking that. If we're being honest, most people, at least at some point, have imagined a version of the good life that looks a lot like that. A life of comfort, security, admiration, and one that's full of ease and luxury. This is the sort of life where things generally work out and where success is visibly seen by ourselves and others and where happiness just seems almost inherent. But here's where things begin to shift, because while that picture of the good life is common, it's not realistic. But even more than that, it's not really what constitutes a good life, at least not according to God. And that realization raises an important question. If that isn't the good life, then what is? The challenge is that most people don't even know there's an alternative definition. That's because the world is constantly telling us a very specific story about what it means to live the good life. And that's a story that's incredibly persuasive. Most people have bought into it. It tells us that the good life is about accumulating wealth, about gaining recognition, about having the right job, the certain possessions, a certain lifestyle, or having certain experiences. It's about knowing the right people and being part of the in crowd. The world says, if you can just earn more, achieve more, acquire more, do more, then you'll finally arrive. You'll have the good life. And we're bombarded with that message in subtle and sometimes not so subtle ways every single day. Through advertising, through social media, through famous people we admire, through the culture we live in. It is the air that everyone breathes. Even if we don't perceive it directly, this is the message that the world pushes forward. But here's the problem with that narrative. More than it's merely incomplete, it's utterly misleading and false because it focuses almost entirely on external things, things that can be lost, things that can fluctuate, things that we may never achieve, and things that don't actually address who we truly are. We are more than what we have, what we've done, or where we live. And that's where the Bible introduces a radically different idea. We are more than what we have, more than what we've done, and more than where we live. We're not defined by wealth, status, or comfort, but by something much deeper and more meaningful, by living according to wisdom. What is true wisdom, really? Now, when we hear the word wisdom, it's easy to misunderstand it. We might think of wisdom simply as being good at making decisions, like, for example, business decisions, or having good judgment, or knowing how to navigate life in a way that leads to success, recognition, or wealth. And while those things are part of it, they don't really capture the full picture. While some, rare few people in life might stumble into fame, fortune, or success. That's generally not how it happens to 99.9% of all people. People who have achieved these things have done so by making good decisions, by working hard, and by being adept at what they do. But godly wisdom is not just about outcomes. It's about alignment. Yes, part of wisdom results in achieving success, gaining wealth, and building recognition. But those outcomes are not the most important part of wisdom. True wisdom is about skillful living. That is, learning to navigate life with intention, discernment, and proficiency. It's not just about making good decisions. It is, but that's not the whole picture. It's about developing a kind of moral and spiritual competence that is needed in everyday life. It's about seeing life from God's perspective. It's about valuing what He values. It's about choosing what is right, even when it doesn't lead to immediate reward or perhaps any perceivable reward. True wisdom isn't defined by materialistic or experiential outcomes. It's defined by God on the basis of how human life should be lived. The truly good life is not something we create based on our preferences. Like I did when I was younger and thought about the good life was having all this stuff, living a grand life that people envied, where life was nice and easy and enjoyable, versus the kind of life that God wants us to live. It's something that we need to discover and then build into our lives. It's rooted in God's design for how life is meant to work. And so that is the shift in our focus, because it means that the good life is not about getting what we want, but it's about becoming who we were made to be. We were made to live in alignment with God's truth and His view for how best to live life. And that kind of God-aligned life produces something deeper than mere success, wealth, or recognition. It produces flourishing and meaning. And so in Proverbs, the good life is not a life of ease or stunning accomplishments or clever intuition. It's learning about living a life that is well-formed according to God's design and instruction. And that distinction becomes even more important when we consider something else that's very popular in our culture today: self-help. We live in a time where self-help resources are everywhere. They're abundant. Books, podcasts, courses, coaching programs, you name it, it's out there. And the reason that they're so popular is, I think, very revealing. At some level, people recognize that something isn't quite right. The way that they're living, the way they're thinking or working or relating to each other, it's just not the best version of what it could be. There's an awareness of deficiency. And that awareness leads people to seek improvement, to try to become more disciplined, more focused, more successful, more fulfilled. In that sense, seeking wisdom is kind of a self-help. It's an acknowledgement that I don't have everything figured out and I need guidance. But here's where things can get confusing, because even when people pursue wisdom, they often do so with the same goal that the world promotes, to achieve that external version of the good life. And that's where godly wisdom begins to challenge us again. Because while it's true that wisdom can lead to success, it's not its ultimate purpose. In fact, sometimes wisdom leads you in the opposite direction of what the world would call success. Sometimes wisdom means giving something up. Sometimes it means choosing the harder path. Sometimes it means being misunderstood, overlooked, or even rejected. It might mean going against the crowd. It might mean denying yourself something you strongly desire. It might mean enduring discomfort instead of avoiding it. And if we're being honest, that's not what we naturally want. Given the choice, I think most of us would prefer a life of ease over hardship, approval over rejection, comfort rather than sacrifice. But that brings us to the heart of the matter of what is wisdom. Wisdom is ultimately about choices. What makes a good choice? Well, that's not always as straightforward as we might think. Some choices are good because they produce good outcomes. They help us achieve goals, avoid problems, or move forward in life. But other choices are good for different reasons entirely. Sometimes good choices are good because they force us to have to become, go outside of our nine dots, out of our comfort zone, to stretch us, to build our character. Sometimes good choices are hard because they reflect God's values of which other people do not adhere to. Or good choices are good because they align us with a higher standard and one that isn't dependent upon physical or external results. Now, sometimes these two categories overlap and other times they don't, which means that in certain moments, a good choice might not feel good and it might not even look good from an outside perspective. What even seems like a good choice in the moment, oftentimes it can turn out to be a rotten choice down the road. Looks can be deceiving when making choices. I was reminded of this lesson not too long ago in a very practical and unfortunately painful way. There was a time when I thought I found a great opportunity. I owned a timeshare, like many people do, but I wasn't using it all the time. And I had extra availability each year. So I ran across a company that offered to rent it out on my behalf. They'd handle all the details, the logistics. It sounded perfect. It felt like an easy way to recoup some cost, a way to kind of offset the expense without really much effort on my part. I was excited about it, probably too excited. I didn't slow down. I didn't do any of my own personal research about it. I didn't ask enough questions. I just said, yes, that sounds great. And then I paid them the fee. Well, months later, I discovered the truth. It was a scam. It was a common fraud scheme, as it turns out. And just like that, I was out of $1,000 or $2. I remember the sinking feeling, the frustration, the embarrassment, the realization that I had been so careless. Eventually, I did file a claim, a fraud claim about the charge, but I wasn't sure anything would come of it. However, praise God, several weeks down the road after that and waiting patiently, I did receive notification of a refund to my account. I was so grateful. The real takeaway from it ended up not being financial loss, but my ego, my comfort, and my sense of well-being. It was a very deep instructional moment for me, and I saw clearly that I had acted without wisdom. I had desire, but no understanding. I had enthusiasm, but no discernment. It was exactly what Proverbs warns about, having zeal or desires without knowledge. And that experience stayed with me. Now, wisdom is a process. Becoming wise is not just something that happens automatically to us. In fact, it's a difficult process in some ways. Research consistently shows that changing habits in life or our patterns of thinking is one of the hardest things that people can attempt to do. Some studies show that it takes anywhere from several weeks to several months to actually establish a new habit. And even then, consistency and carrying on the habit is not even guaranteed. Now, compare that to other areas of life. Think about how quickly we're willing to sometimes invest our time in entertainment or into hobbies or other things we enjoy. We'll spend hours watching TV shows, scrolling on our phones, learning a game or developing a skill that interests us. But when it comes to growing in wisdom, training our minds, reshaping our thinking, developing discernment, it often can feel like a burden, like a task we have to do, something that we'll maybe want to get to later. We like the idea, but don't want to put the time and energy into it. It's hard to prioritize it now. Well, becoming wise doesn't happen overnight. Doesn't happen from even a single decision. It's built over time. In many ways, it's like learning a special technique or a craft. Imagine someone's learning to play an instrument. At first, everything kind of feels unnatural. We're not used to doing it. The movements are awkward. The sounds are inconsistent at best. Progress is slow, but with time, practice, and intentional effort, things begin to change. What once seemed difficult and unnatural becomes easier and more instinctive. Wisdom works the same way. It's developed through repeated action, repeated choices, through reflection, through receiving correction, and then through learning. And gradually over time, it begins to shape who we are. Wisdom, true wisdom, is what leads to the truly good life. So where are we going to go from here in this class? Well, if wisdom is the key to living the truly good life, then the question becomes, where do we find it? And this is where the book of Proverbs opens that door. Proverbs doesn't just offer us advice. It gives us a vision for life, a vision that's grounded and purposeful and aligned with God. It speaks to everyday decisions. It addresses our relationships, work, the way we talk, what we do and our behavior, and the habits that we build both in our mind and in our lives. It exposes foolishness by contrasting it with wisdom in very concrete and direct ways. Now, wisdom doesn't promote simply a life of ease. Clearly, if you live a wise life, life will go better than if you live a foolish life. But wisdom promises a life of meaning, a life that's stable, even in uncertainty, a life that's guided, even in chaos and complexity, and a life that's truly good, not because everything goes perfectly, but because it's rooted in something deeper. So as we move forward, we're going to explore that together. We're going to uncover what Proverbs says about wisdom, how to pursue it, and how it reshapes our understanding of what the good life really is all about. Because the good life isn't something you get at some point in your life, or you accidentally stumble into it, or just happen to be one of the lucky people. It's something you learn to live step by step, day by day. Because wisdom is a journey, and I hope you enjoy this exciting adventure. So what this class is going to be all about is we're going to look at what are Proverbs. In the book of Proverbs, in the Bible, there's a lot of different things we call Proverbs. There are speech poems that are longer. There are short, pithy sayings like aphorisms. There are riddles that seem confusing and difficult to understand. And there are wise sayings. We're going to look at who is the book of Proverbs written to? There's a couple different audiences for the book of Proverbs. And each one is important to know because that forms some of the background upon which that proverb is understood. How to discern if a proverb applies. Proverbs, as we will talk about, are not universally all applicable in all situations in every particular circumstance of life. There is a wisdom involved in knowing when a proverb is right to apply and when it's not. We're going to talk about, well, as you read Proverbs, what is Proverbs doing to you? How is it setting before you wisdom? How is it motivating us to want to change and be transformed? And then lastly, we're going to definitely look at, well, how can we grow in and apply wisdom more readily and more effectively in our lives? So that's an introduction to the class, The Road of Wisdom. And we'll be continuing on with our next session, How to Read Proverbs, next.